There is life-changing power in having the proper perspective. That is, one simple truth can change everything. Imagine you are in a department store with your three-year-old. You are there for the purpose of finding a pair of jeans to purchase. You are sorting through the stacks of jeans to find the right size when you remember to look to check to see if your three-year-old is where he's supposed to be, and he's not. Instant panic sets in. The fear that you feel immediately is almost palpable. Your body goes on full alert. Your eyes look both near and far frantically, and your mind comes up with the worst possible conclusions. With all of those people around you and all of those clothing racks so nearby, your visual perspective is limited, so you cannot see where your child is. Then you get a different perspective. You simply move a little bit and you see something you had not before known, and it changes everything. One simple fact alters all of your feelings and all of those worst things that you could possibly imagine. You spot your spouse who has unexpectedly come into the store, and with your spouse is your three-year-old. And everything's different. A simple truth can totally change your perspective. You go from the feelings of greatest fear to great relief. Much of life is like that. Knowing the truth about some things makes all the difference in the world, both in this life and in death itself. Most of us have known something of deep sadness, or you have known something of great fear, or maybe you have lived for years with a certain amount of doubt. For those of you who have lost someone you truly love, you know something about deep sadness. As you've watched them breathe your last, you realize that you will not have them with you again. If you have ever been without a job for any length of time, then you know something of the fear that one might have in wondering if you'll ever again be able to care for your own family. If you've ever seen death, or you've ever thought much about it, then you know something of the doubts that can come into your mind when you hear someone talk about a literal resurrection. Now, this morning, we've been talking about Jesus as if he died and actually, physically, literally rose again from the dead. If you've thought much about that, certainly you have entertained some doubts. I want you to meet three people this morning. I want you to see the real struggles with which they lived, and I want you to see life from their perspective, and then I want you to see one fact that so radically altered their perspectives that their lives were never the same. These stories are found for us in the Gospel of John, chapter 20. The first one I want you to meet is a woman. It was early on a Sunday morning. In fact, it was still dark. Her name was Mary. She had come from a smaller town by the name of Magdala, and she was leaving the city to go outside of the city walls to a cemetery. On Friday of that same week, she had witnessed the death of her best friend, Jesus. She had stood nearby as on a place called the Skull, he was put to death. You can only know the kind of grief, the kind of sadness that she experienced if you too have lost a loved one, if you have stood by their bedside and watched them breathe their last. Numbed with sadness, Mary somehow found her way to the gravesite, for there she was going to anoint or put spices on the body. That's something akin to what we do when we take flowers to a grave. But what she saw when she reached the gravesite simply intensified her anxiety and her sadness. The stone that should have been over the entrance of the grave cave had been moved. And her fears instantly were that someone had come and stolen the body in order to desecrate it even further. And she just stood there and cried. Over the last 3 years, she had grown to love this man. She, like others, had come to believe that he was specially from God. But now he was dead. She believed that he was different. But he died like everyone else, and he was gone. In fact, her sadness grew out of that idea that the one she had known so well, she would never, ever see again. Others would probably come to her in even a short time and say to her, "Time will heal things." But she knew in her own heart that time does not heal death. And this friend of hers was gone, not here ever again. And when she thought of it, the pain was almost unbearable. She turned around and she saw someone that she assumed was the caretaker of the seminary. He spoke, but she didn't listen all that carefully. And then she asked him if he knew where the body had been taken. Now, what happened next is one of those defining moments in life. It is one of those times that may be very, very short, but in fact, it alters everything. Mary heard and saw something that gave her a whole new perspective on life, a whole new perspective on death. One fact that forever changed that woman. That person next to her, that one who was there by the gravesite, spoke her name. And he simply said, "Mary. Mary." And she instantly knew it was Jesus. It was him. She heard him with her own ears. She saw him with her own eyes. She touched him with her own hands. And she realized this was not a dream. This was not an apparition. Jesus was alive. Months earlier, Jesus had said, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies." Now Mary understood as she never had before. There before her was this Jesus who had died, but he was alive. And it had implications not only for her relationship with him, but it also had implications for her relationships with all of the others who had loved and followed Jesus. Death does not end the relationships of people related to Jesus. As a pastor, I have been involved in many funerals, and I think I can understand the difference between those who know what Mary learned that day and those who have not learned. Those who don't know. A year ago, the Scott and Tomlin families lost children in what has become known as the Columbine tragedy. I could not help but notice in this past week the tremendous difference between what those families say and what most people have said during even Thursday's remembrance services. For most of the world, death is the end. And the best they can seem to conjure up is some kind of talk about how the dead live on in our memories and how our lives are somehow made better by theirs. Though the Scotts and the Tomlins suffered as deeply as did anyone else in that experience, they know with certainty that they will see their own beloved children again. Why do they believe that? They believe it because they know that Jesus, though he truly died, also truly came back to life again, literally, physically alive. And because he is alive in that way, they can believe his promises. And Jesus promised that those who trust in him would be resurrected just as he was resurrected. They would be resurrected when he comes again. And those families, as many of you who have lost believing loved ones, have a radically different perspective on life than do the others who do not know Jesus. Jesus told Mary to go and tell the disciples what had happened, what he had said, and she did so. And when she did, I think she summarized all the theology that matters in one sentence. "I have seen the Lord." I love it. I have seen the Lord. If Jesus truly is alive, then death is not the end. If Jesus truly is alive, my loved ones who have followed Jesus but have died will be seen again. They are not gone forever. Jesus' resurrection, that one fact changes everything. Remember Jesus' words, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies." And Jesus said in John 20, "Do you believe?" And I ask, do you believe? Mary was the first witness to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Will you accept her testimony? It totally altered Mary's perspective. It changed her life. And it can change yours. The next people I would like you to meet are 10 of Jesus' disciples. Again, you'll find it in John chapter 20. It was evening of that same Sunday, and Jesus' disciples were gathered together, that is, except for Thomas. They were locked behind doors because those disciples were fearful. After all, from the disciples' perspectives, Jesus had been executed and his disciples might be next. If Jesus was considered a felon, then maybe they would be considered the same. But not only were these men living in fear in the midst of that, they also felt like fools to a certain extent. They had given themselves to this man and to his ideas for 3 years. They believed in him. They believed in the great potential that was his. They had some sense of no longer living under Roman authority. And they even had something of an idea of what he was talking about on a grander scheme even than political liberty. But now all of that was down the tubes. And to a certain extent, they felt like fools. Not only felons, not only fools, they also felt like failures. For when their friend had needed them the most 3 days earlier, they had run like scared schoolboys. The one they loved had been indicted and then executed, and they could do nothing but hide. They had failed the most important relationship in their lives. And they felt like a band of fearful felons, fools, and failures. But what happened next is one of those defining moments in life. It's one of those times that radically alters everything and the way you see all of life. With the door locked, Jesus suddenly stood among them. For many years, as I have read that text in the various Gospels, I have imagined what that must have been like. They are there talking in rather muted tones, I suspect, as they are lamenting both their failure and their foolishness and concerned about their fears. And so they are talking among themselves when all of a sudden Jesus appears, and I would guess that conversation stopped ever so abruptly. Silence. Their mouths drop open. Their eyes widen. It feels like their hearts stop even as their pulses quicken. And then Jesus speaks. He speaks. "Peace be with you." Now, this sounds rather stilted to us, like something maybe out of a Kenneth Branagh film today. But it wasn't unusual then. It was a common greeting, but it took on meaning for them, unlike anything they had ever heard before, because they heard those words coming from the lips of the Jesus they had seen die. And here he was in their midst speaking. As first one, and then I suppose another, dared, they stepped forward and they touched him. And Jesus, in that moment, as they crowded around him, showed them his hands, and showed him them his side. And there was no doubt about it. It was him. They were looking at Jesus. The one that they had seen dead is the one that is now standing before them alive. And they are overjoyed. That one fact, you can imagine it, that one fact completely alters everything going on in that room. That one fact completely and dramatically alters their perspective on life and on death. And that one truth moved them from fear to confidence. No, they were not foolish for following Jesus. He was who he claimed to be. But they were still failures. And they had failed him. And yet Jesus once again spoke to them, and he said, "Peace be with you." And in the days ahead, those words would take on a meaning that they probably didn't even understand at that very moment. For they came to understand that what had just transpired was that Jesus, God himself, had hung on the cross to pay the penalty for their sins and their failures. And when Jesus spoke to them and said, "Peace be with you," it was a peace that carried all of the weight of the cross. To them had been given a right relationship with God. They were not fools. Oh, they were failures, but they were forgiven failures. And by God's power, they would change the world. I want you to think about the word that characterized those men before Jesus entered that room. It's the word fear. And it's a word, frankly, that characterizes many people today. Fear of life itself, fear of losing health, fear of losing a relationship, fear of failure, fear of death itself. But one fact, one solitary truth, can radically alter that entire perspective. And that one fact that changes everything is the fact that Jesus truly is alive. Literally, physically alive. The third person that I want you to meet is Thomas. Again, according to John chapter 20, Thomas wasn't there when Jesus first met with his disciples. And when he came later, they told him that they had seen Jesus, but he would not believe them. Instead, he said these words, "Unless I see the nail marks and put my hand on his side, I won't believe." I suspect that Thomas was no different than the others. There was too much evidence that Jesus was dead. Just like us, Thomas had not seen many resurrections. He'd seen a lot of people die. He had an understanding of life that was grounded in the evidence of death. He'd never seen resurrection. We see people die. We read about it in the newspapers. We even have friends that die. We are so grounded in it that we wonder when somebody talks about resurrection, is that literally true? Oh, we might have some concept of resurrection like much of the world does that talks about some kind of ethereal existence or living on in the minds of others or something that is totally spiritual and otherworldly. But a literal physical resurrection where you can see that person with your eyes and talk to them and hear them with your own ears, that kind of resurrection, maybe. We're not so convinced. It happened a week later on a Sunday, and this time Thomas was with the others. It was one of those defining moments in life that forever changes you. And it changed Thomas. Thomas was given a whole new perspective on life because Jesus came into that room and stood in front of him. Again, I imagine that scene. Everyone else, of course, had had the previous experience, and so they all start to make a move toward Jesus. And then they realized, just as if it was on some movie studio set, that the light is not on them. The light is on Jesus and Thomas. And they step back. And it's just Jesus and Thomas. Thomas's jaw goes slack. His eyes bulge. And Jesus, without being told what Thomas had earlier said to the disciples, says to Thomas, "Look, Thomas. Touch my hands and side. Stop being a doubting person and believe." The evidence before Thomas was overwhelming. He had heard Mary. She said she had seen him. He had heard the other disciples. They too had said they had seen him. But now standing before Thomas, and Thomas could not claim it was some kind of dream. He knew it was physically and literally true. Jesus was standing before him. And when that fact sank into his heart and mind, he could not help but those words bubbling up on his lips in which he said, "My Lord and my God." Some of you might think that you are sitting on the fence regarding this idea of a literal resurrection. You're certain that you are not an atheist, but you are not certain that you fully buy into the concept of a literal physical resurrection. Your motto has always been to kind of leave your options open. But I say to you this morning, you cannot be in between. You are either a believer or you aren't. You either believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the risen Christ, or you do not believe. The witnesses have testified. The evidence is in. Jesus is that truly and literally alive. The writer of the Gospel of John concluded his remarks by saying this, "These," that is all the testimony that he had put forth in the Gospel of John, "these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you might have life in his name." Jesus is alive. And that changes everything. From that perspective, all of life and all of death and eternity is radically altered. For Mary, it turned her grief into joy. For the other disciples, it turned their fear into peace. For Thomas itself, it turned his doubt into confidence. Jesus' question, again, I think is so important. Do you believe? Maybe just as importantly, will you believe? Let's pray. God, what more could we ask for? Well, I suppose there are some of us here who would have the audacity to say that we expect you to appear here right now in physical form and demonstrate to us, as you did to those disciples, the literalness and physicality of your resurrection. Well, Father, your word teaches us that miracles themselves don't convince. By your Spirit, using the evidence of your word, the choice is ours to believe or not. God, the evidence is so great. By your Spirit, even today, God, overcome doubts. Give a new confidence, please, Father, to all of us in terms of the resurrection. I pray especially for those who may be in this room this morning who have never yielded their lives to you, God. They have never trusted in that risen Christ. God, give them an absolute confidence even now that it's true, that your Son Jesus is alive, that God, their faith may be in him. God, thank you for the resurrection. Thank you for this day. Please, God, encourage our faith, strengthen our resolve to follow you, because you're alive. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.